Welcome to another G4 Guitar podcast. My name is David Hart and I am the founder and the program director of the G4 Guitar International Franchise Network. If you want to find out more information on G4 Guitar, please visit our website at g4guitarmethod.com. That's the letter G, the numeral 4, the word guitar, method, .com. And it's all one word. Today's topic is group teaching with G4 Guitar. What we want to do in this podcast is talk about how you should be teaching with the G4 Guitar method in a group scenario, the kind of problems that you will face, the kind of challenges and fears and doubts and concerns that get raised. Really what I want to do is just have a general conversation here about teaching groups with the G4 Guitar method to give you an idea of the kind of things that you will expect as a group teacher using the G4 system and how to deal with each of those problems. So the first thing that I get asked, or a common question that I get asked, is how do you group different kinds of students together? Let's say that you've got one student who had already begun on the first level. They've been doing it now for, let's say, 3 months, and they're kind of getting towards the end of that first level. And then you've got another student who you want to join that group. How do you bring the two together, considering one is almost finished that level and one is just starting out? Well, what you do in these scenarios is that the one who's just joining the group and just starting out, obviously when you're small and you're growing, this is a problem because you don't have many students to group, so you're trying to group students who tend to be on more extremes or more likely to be on those extremes or different levels. So what you do is you work with the student who is really at the beginning stage, and you try and spend more time with them outside of the group scenario. So you give them extra private lessons. So you do your 5 week initial private intro, but then you get them to come in the group and do your best with them, but say to them, when you have something that's out of their understanding or their range, you just say, we're going to do an extra lesson on Thursday. Come on Thursday and I'm going to take you through that material. So you keep doing that until you get them up to a speed where they're able to fit into that group. Now, obviously, if the other student is moving up to the next level very soon, you don't really need to group those two students. What you can do is just keep them in separate groups because the new one who's come through, and I'm talking about the extreme here, the new one who's just come through the intro, should really be the start of a new group and they should be there ready for other students to come through. As your school starts to grow and you get more enrollments, then you're going to see less and less of this problem because as more students come in, obviously there's more gradings and more levels, so it's easier to put students in there. And you're going to get students who progress differently, who practice more, and these kind of scenarios of where you've got two extreme students won't be as big a problem because sometimes you'll have a student who's in that first level. They're not practicing as much as perhaps, say, a new student who's just joined the school, who's just gone through 5 weeks, who's practicing like crazy to impress you. When they join the group, okay, they're going to be behind, but they're going to learn very quickly, going to be hungry to learn and hungry to catch up with the group and move forward. So as far as the different levels are concerned, the strategy that I used to build the business in the first place when I did the very first G4 Guitar School using the G4 Guitar method was this. And keep this in mind because this is what you should really use. I had the idea that each group was going to be 5 students, and most were. I had an average of 4 to 5 students in nearly all my groups. So what would happen is I started out, and you can imagine at the very beginning I enrolled, like anybody starting, not many students. So I think in the first month I enrolled 10 students. And out of those 10 students, some were adults, some were teenagers, some were little kids. So the possibilities of grouping were almost none. I think the first group I put together was just a couple of kids who were actually friends. And so I managed to put them into that very first group. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, is this going to happen? You know, I have to keep the faith here that these groups are going to grow and build. And I remember at times it being a bit stressful because I even had parents saying to me, hey, when are we going to be in a group? You know, my child's been learning with you now for 6 weeks or 7 weeks. They've done the intro. They're now 2 weeks into the group and they're not actually in a group with anyone. They're still on their own. Is this group thing just a fantasy? Do you really have enough students coming in and out of here? What's going on? So what I would do at that time is I made what I call groups of one.
So, for instance, on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, as I remember, I would say at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday, I have students of young age group, so juniors, and the same on a Wednesday. So when students would book in, they had a choice to come on the Tuesday or the Wednesday for the group once they'd finished the 5-week intro. So I did that, but as students started to come through, obviously there were ones who were in those groups for a while, and then when the new ones came through, they weren't at the same level. And here I had this student who'd been with me for, 3 months, and they were ready to move to the next level. But what I found that happened, very interestingly, was that I would have new students come in who may have had some experience before, who were already at a second level because of their previous experience. Maybe they'd learned at school or they had a teacher somewhere else. They had a few gaps to fill in. And so what we did is we used the 5 weeks to fill in those gaps, and then I could easily slot them into that level. If it was the first level or the second level, I could slot them in at that appropriate point, and then I'd start to get matches. And I found as the more students started to enroll, the more I was able to match them. But another thing occurred, which was even more interesting, was that I found that my confidence and my ability to work with groups increased with, really by the day. Everything got better and better. And I was developing the method at the same time. So I wanted to make sure the method was assisting me and making it easy for me to work with groups. And so I got to the point where probably about 3 or 4 months in, when I was, at about 50 students, I think, at that point, that it really started to come together. My confidence really lifted. It was that first 3 months that was the hard and the stressful part. And then by the 6 or 7 month mark, I was getting up near 100 students, teaching them in groups, and it was pretty full on. It was pretty busy. I had, one day almost 50 students coming on that one day. And so it was kind of full on, hectic, but I was loving it. I thought, wow, this is great. I'm really in in this group teaching mode. I'd really found, because I had years of teaching experience, so I wasn't inexperienced as a teacher. I just hadn't had a lot of years of group teaching. I'd been doing adult groups, and I'd sort of done rock school programs where you bring them together in a band, and I'd done those kind of things. And of course, I'd played in bands myself, and I'd ran businesses, and I'd built teams. So I was used to the whole team building thing, but it didn't occur to me to do it in group teaching with a guitar. And then once I started applying all those skills that I'd learned over the years and seeing it happen with my groups, my guitar groups, that's when the magic really came together for me. So I was able to see the way that they started to work as teams, even if there were different levels. And anyone here has played in a band, which is probably most people who are listening to this, you know that there's going to be, in every band, there's going to be some guy who's kind of the whiz, who knows it all, knows every chord, knows every possible technique. They're very skilled. They just have a flair. And then you've got the other guy who, really nice guy, nice personality, doesn't have the musical talent, but you still want them in the band anyway because they're just that kind of person. Sometimes it's like a front person, like a singer, who just has that dynamic personality. They don't have the greatest voice in the world. I go back and I think of a group like Van Halen, where very talented guitar, drums, even bass, and then you've got David Lee Roth, who, let's face it, he wasn't the world's greatest singer, but he was a fantastic front man, so he really put on a great show and performed. And that's what a group and a band wants, is to have that combination of different strengths and weaknesses even. So in the case of working with groups and bringing my guitar groups together, I found that even though they were at different levels, they still enjoyed working together if I kept it as a team, if I worked it as a team. The better players really enjoyed helping those players who were coming through. I found that it was a lot of this buddy kind of thing going on, where you would get the older student, or the more experienced student, the better student, showing the other student after class, before class. Sometimes they became good friends. There was this kind of reciprocal situation where the student helping the other student got the pleasure of helping them, and the student who received was also giving back in other ways, maybe through a friendship or whatever. But it was amazing to watch, and it was amazing to see these groups work together as teams. And this is something that is seriously underestimated as far as the value to your students and the value to you as a teacher. And I really encourage you to bring your groups together no matter what. So don't be afraid to to put students together even at different levels and work at bringing them together over time, building a team, making friendships and so forth. So my message in this first part about bringing the groups together and the question of, you know, students at different levels, the levels are actually not as important as you think. And in fact, they're probably less important than personalities, less important than the idea of people who want to be kind of team players and have a group mentality. So when you, some students don't want to be in a group, and that's okay, but most students are happy to go in a group or at least try it. And the ones you're looking for are just to bring it together and have that kind of connection within the group. So that's really the first thing that I wanted to cover, is that hesitation and fear about teaching groups. So let's look at some of the scenarios in group teaching, the kind of things that will make a difference as far as your effectiveness as a teacher. Now, with the G4 guitar method, it's really important to be using the checklists and to be using the practice logs. The practice logs are going to help you monitor the practice, of course, and it also gives the student the impression, hopefully it's the right impression, of that you care about their practice. And checking their practice logs each week when they come in, having a look at the log and saying, okay, great, giving them some feedback, that lets them know that you care and you're interested and reassures them that they're doing something. So there's a kind of an old saying of you get what you focus on. And if you focus on a student's practice, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get more and more practice. If you don't look at their log or you only check it every couple of weeks, they're not going to worry too much about it. They're going to think you're not really checking, you don't really care, so it doesn't matter. And that's the main reason, as far as I'm concerned, for the practice log, is so they know that I care, that this is important to me. You're coming to me as a student. I want you to succeed, so I want to see your practice log. Really, really important to me. Now, the second thing here is the checklist, and the checklist is really about measuring their performance, seeing how they're progressing through the different levels and the different stages, and also keeping everybody on the same page, literally on the same page. This is what we're all doing, guys. This is the goal. This is the mountain we're climbing. So when they enter your classroom and they look at your checklists, they're not thinking, what am I supposed to be doing or what are we going to do today? It's in front of them. They know the boxes that aren't ticked are the things that you're likely to pick out and work on. When they go home, they also know the boxes that aren't ticked are the things that they should be working on. If they are children with parents, again, they know to look at the list to see. So everybody is literally on the same page. And having that ability to keep everyone together on the same page and focused on the same thing creates tremendous momentum. It's what will get your groups moving much faster, get them moving through the skills and the practice much faster, because they know what to practice at home and they know what you're going to be looking for when they come in. When they can see that there's a scale, they just learnt that scale, they went through the scale, there's no tick on that box, they sit down to do their practice, they look at that scale and they go, wow, I don't know the A minor scale, I need to work out what the A minor scale is. So they'll go to the internet, YouTube or whatever and look it up, but they will find the answer even if they don't remember what happened in class. Having that checklist gives them the ability to go home and the incentive, if you like, to find the answers, knowing that you're going to be asking. So it takes away this whole kind of scenario that often happens with, you know, your typical private teacher, where they're constantly thinking that the class is about teaching, that they're going, that everything that they do in that classroom is about teaching the student what to do. And even though that is a part of it, it can't be the whole thing. And in fact, it should become less and less over time to where the students know exactly what they're doing. So you might think, if that's the case, if my goal, if you like, if my strategy was to get them to know what to practice, why would they need me after a while? Why would they need me as a teacher? They know what to do. They know to go and look it up on the internet. They know they can find it, an A minor scale, a C scale, whatever they're supposed to be doing, they can find those things. So why would they keep coming to me? This is where the group teaching scenario comes into play. When we have someone who's checking on us, first of all, I'll just talk about the teacher, but when we have someone checking up on us, we feel accountable. We have a natural almost evolutionary trait built into us that we're accountable when people are watching. They've showed this many, many times. When people have a personal fitness coach, they're much more likely to lose weight and get fit. When people have a job, they're more likely to work. Have a boss who's watching them, they're more likely to work. When they have, if you go out into public and people see something happen, if there's someone watching them, they're less likely, let's say it could be something like, you know, littering or doing something that they wouldn't normally do that's not socially acceptable, they won't do it in public if someone else is watching, because there's that sense of accountability. I'm accountable for my behavior. So the same thing happens in a teaching scenario with a teacher. But when you have a group, it actually is even more the case, because you get into this group standard where, hey, I want to keep up with the group. I have to do everybody else is doing the practice. Everybody else is working on this checklist, so I need to keep up. And this creates an almost an internal thing with the person, that they feel part of a group and they feel part of a club, if you like. So they actually do want to keep coming and they do want to be a part of it. But it's not only that, it's good for them. It's their best strategy if they want to succeed at something is to do it in a group scenario. An example that I often give is that a friend of mine, often we would train together. We would, you know, go jogging or do exercise or whatever we would do. We'd have a kind of a morning routine. And many times when we started these routines, especially in the beginning, each time we do it, you know, they tend to start and then go for 3 months or 6 months, and then something had happened and then we'd stop. But what would happen is we'd start out going, you know, we put on a few kilos, we need to get fit, et cetera, et cetera. We'd say, let's just do it. Let's get out there and make it happen. And we'd go for runs and then a swim. And sometimes we'd do like triathlon level training where we were literally doing a 10K jog with a you know, 5K swim and a bike ride, 45, 60, up to 60K bike ride. So we were doing this sometimes every day. And what kept me doing it, especially in the early stages when you don't always feel like getting out of bed, you don't feel like going, was knowing my friend would be waiting there. And if I didn't go, he'd be coming down on me. That was what kept me going. And it's also what kept him going, was knowing that we were accountable. We actually increased that to a third guy, and it got even better with the third guy. So there was that sense of accountability. And that's why when you teach in groups, you build that team and you build that accountability. Your students are going to stay longer. They're going to be more engaged. And it's not so much about where they're at when they join the group. The idea is, hey, join the group. I think you're okay to join this group. You're going to have to work to catch up, but that's okay. Work hard. Make it happen. We'll do a few private lessons leading up to it. We'll do, you know, I'll put in a few extra private lessons if I need to. But the idea is just to get them in there. So what I want you to do, what I really want you to think about, is to change your mindset about whether or not two students are going to work out in a group, and to get out of that mode of feeling like you have to justify your actions all the time. And this is something that I, you know, overcame very early with my group teaching, was where parents would sort of be looking doubtful about whether or not their child was learning anything in that group. You know, it's kind of like they had in their mind, you're putting my child in with four other kids all at once for half an hour. Don't know if that's going to work very well. I've seen these kind of scenarios and they don't work very well. So that having those kind of doubts, that you could see it on parents, I realized that they were getting that from me, that was me not being totally confident about what I was about to deliver. And I wasn't totally confident because I was still developing the teaching in those early stages. But what happened was that as I became more organized and I had the method more systemized and knew exactly what I was going to do and how I was going to run the groups, my confidence increased. Confidence increases, by the way, through capability. It's not just a case of, I believe I can do it. Yes, give yourself those affirmations. I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. But what is really a better affirmation and a more honest affirmation is to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do what I need to learn how to do this and make it work. So this is one of those things where it's very easy to misunderstand the rah-rah, if you like, or the hype that comes often from motivational coaches, where they say to you things like, believe you can do it, believe and you can achieve, you know, these kind of ideas that just by believing you're going to achieve the result. The reality is that that's not, we know that doesn't happen. I can't sit here in my chair and eat and, you know, unhealthy foods and do no exercise, and then imagine that somehow I'm going to become fit and healthy. Imagining if I was, let's say I was really overweight and I was doing that every day and just sitting here in my chair believing I'm going to become like that. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen until I get out of my chair and start sweating and start doing things. So I need to be realistic and honest with myself and say the affirmation that I'm going to do this. I'm going to take action today to get me closer to that goal. It may take me 6 months. It may take me a year. It may take me 5 years, but I'm going to keep working until I reach that goal. I know every day that I take action, I'm getting closer and closer to the goal. That's a better affirmation for your teaching. And so if you want to be more realistic and get away from that kind of hyper motivational, spiritual, whatever you want to call it, and be realistic, which is what I try and be. That's my main aim here, is to be realistic about who I am and to say, okay, where am I now? Where do I want to be? And if I go back to that point, and hopefully you can relate to this, go back to the point of where I was not a very capable group teacher, but my vision was to be a successful group teacher because that's where I saw the potential. First of all, I'll be honest with you, first of all, it was a business motivation. I wanted to be able to make more money in less time. I don't make any qualms about that. That was my initial motivation. But I also didn't want, and this is, I guess maybe it's my conscience or it's just a moral thing, my morality, was that I didn't want my students to be compromised in any way. I didn't want them to get less of a lesson than they would if they were learning private. So I decided that that was the standard that I was aiming for. How was I going to get? And on my journey to getting there, I found that there were actually benefits to group learning, which you do not get from private. So not only was I able to equal the standard, I was able to improve on it. I took it to another level. And that's when my confidence went through the roof. That's when I thought, wow, this is it. People, everybody should be learning in small groups. There's no reason why students shouldn't learn in small groups. And then I, you know, obviously, if you go to places like the Institute of Music in the US or Berkeley or any of these top, universities even, they teach in groups. It's all group action. Yes, they have some private lessons on the side. They might have extra coaches, but they do a lot of group work in those top schools. And that's because the group work is very important. And there are things that you will get from private tuition, and I'm not saying don't have some extra private tuition on the side, but there is no reason that you should just have private lessons or you should even compare private lessons to group. Group is in itself a better experience for many reasons. Private in itself has a few benefits, but it's not the best choice. It's not like which do I choose? They are both good choices, but the group tuition is where you as a teacher will also benefit greatly through obviously increased earnings, but your students won't have to suffer in any way. They will get just as good and even better, as I said, deal for their money. So coming back to the scenario of taking students into groups and having that confidence to deliver the mindset that I was talking about, is you need to think about yourself in the future at some point. It could be 6 months, could be a year, having these groups full, going, okay, I'm teaching 3 days a week, I've got 100 students, and I'm teaching within a 15-hour period, less than 20 hours, let's say, I've got 100 students in that time, and they're all flowing smoothly, everything is going well. You need to have that vision in mind and you need to stick with it. And so when parents or look at you, or a student looks at you with disappointment, like, okay, this is not really working, or they're doubtful, they're cynical, all those kind of things, what you've got to do is go, okay, where is the doubt? What do I have to do to lift my game as a group teacher? What do I need to improve on? How am I going to convince these students, convince these parents that I can deliver on this? And where I did it was obviously just through doing it and gaining experience and writing lots of notes, learning from every lesson that I did. But it was also by checking in with the students. Are you okay? You're happy with your progress? And making sure that they were getting what they needed to get out of it. So if I had a parent, which, you know, occasionally happened, especially early on, who was doubtful and said, look, I really think private lessons are better. My child learns violin over here and it's always been private and that's the way we think it should be. Then I would say, okay, what are your concerns? Is it because they're not going to learn as much? They're not practicing? What is it? And the parents would express whatever it was. And then I would take that and then I would give them some kind of solution to that. In other words, I'd say, look, let them run with the group, and if there's any areas of concern, let me know, and I will give a one-on-one lesson. I don't have any qualms or any problems with that. But what happened is their confidence built, and soon that wasn't even an issue. They didn't ask for private lessons. They just simply were happy with the way that things were going. They could see the energy and the enthusiasm that was coming out of the classes as well. They were making friends. So they were able to see these extra benefits. They realized it wasn't just simply about learning to play guitar. It was about the whole experience of staying with guitar. And this is probably, and I'll leave you with this, but this is really one of the biggest reasons that I think group teaching trumps private tuition, is it's that connection with other students that they make that keeps them going, because guitar takes a while to learn. It's not an easy instrument to learn. So if a student does 3 months on guitar by themselves, private lessons, they're not really making a lot of progress because it's those early stages. The parents become doubtful. The student becomes doubtful. They quit. But if they're in a group and they're going, okay, well, I'm not the only one here. Other students are struggling as well. Everyone finds it a bit challenging. But hey, those other kids in my class or those other students in my class, they're fun and I enjoy it. I always feel good when I come away from my group. So I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep doing it anyway. That's the difference that often happens with groups. If you deliver well, if you deliver with enthusiasm and you deliver with a sense of real purpose, a real team kind of atmosphere within your groups, you won't lose students. They will stick in there with you. And that's really the main aim here in the first year, is to get students to make reasonable progress, but to stay in there and to understand what's involved with learning guitar and that it takes time. And then, you know, from there on, generally with most students, by the time they get to the second year, they really take off. That's when they really start practicing seriously. The first year is, to them, is just about getting used to it, learning, getting familiar with the guitar and what it takes and, you know, what to expect, so to speak. And they tend to lower their expectations a little bit. By the end of that first year, they realize, hey, I'm not going to be the next Segovia within 1 year. It's not going to happen. It takes time to learn guitar, especially at a high level. So after that first year, they're generally more realistic. They understand they've had some time to learn the instrument, so they get a better sense of where they're at. So I'll leave you there. Thank you again for tuning in. Hopefully that's been very helpful. Remember, if you're interested as a guitar teacher in the G4 Guitar Teacher Franchise Network, remember we play as a team as well. And by being part of the network, if you're interested, just go to g4guitarmethod.com. It's the letter G, the numeral 4, the word guitar, the word method, or one word.com. And you just click on the teach icon there and you will get to our page where you can fill in a form. Thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, please feel free to email me. Thank you.